public key infrastructure that we're deploying is based on some somewhat proprietary technology that comes from RSA. Is that the right technology to be basing this global security infrastructure on?
It's the best technology that I've seen. Basically, all other technologies that would compete with it have the property that the people who wish to communicate have to somehow meet. They have to somehow exchange some secure information outside of the context of the Internet. And many people on the Internet who communicate only communicate through the network because of economic reasons, geographic distances, or what have you. The network, to be really useful, must be a whole unto itself, and public key cryptography is one of the key technologies that enables it. And indeed, in this country, in the United States, it is a proprietary technology. And one of the challenges facing us is figuring out ways to deal with that proprietary technology to ensure that the owners of it are properly compensated, and yet the technology is widely deployed in a manner that is not offensive to the end users. And I might add that public key technology is not the only proprietary technology that's in widespread use. Ethernet, one of the key local area networking technologies, is a proprietary technology. There are many patents that cover it. And when you buy Ethernet hardware, part of the money that you pay for that goes to pay the patent holders. And so what we need is to figure out a fair and equitable way of compensating the inventors of the public key technology and the patent holders, and yet is as innocuous and is in essence unnoticed as the payments of patents on Ethernet boards.
The Internet is a global infrastructure, and the RSA technology is subject to some export restrictions. How is that going to impact our ability to deploy that infrastructure?
Well, there's a very simple answer to that, which is some people might argue with this, particularly people within the export control area. Not that I want to say bad things about them. You can draw your own conclusions, but there are some people who think that only smart people exist in the United States. But frankly, my experience shows that that's just not true. And indeed, export control says that an implementation of privacy-enhanced mail or any protocol that would be using public key cryptography or any cryptography for that matter can't be exported from the U.S., but there's nothing to say that somebody in another country can't implement something according to the same set of RFCs and have them interoperate. One of the beauties of the Internet standards process is because so much emphasis is placed on interoperable implementations and the standards are fine-tuned so that if two people or two organizations read the standard and code to it, that they would result in something that would interoperate, we're a leg up. I mean, it's very likely that we will see, and in fact, we're already beginning to see, PEM implementations done in other countries that will interoperate with ours. And in that context, export control is just not an issue.
But are the export controls rational? Do they have any technical basis? In fact, if people in other countries are able to do that technology, what's the purpose of an export control?
Well, I'm not the right person to ask that question. Obviously, you have to find the right people within the government, and I'm not sure that they're forthcoming with this type of stuff to come out and explain their rationale, but I can speculate. I think what's happening, if I was in their position, and if I was to take their point of view, I think the thing that concerns the export control people and it concerns law enforcement agents is their nightmare is a terrorist or a drug dealer going into a Radio Shack store and buying the realistic telephone authenticator and scrambler, which uses technology so strong that they cannot break it, and yet there it is for $10. Anybody can walk off the street and buy it. That's their nightmare. I don't think they're concerned with an Internet professional writing a program or even a PEM implementation and distributing it, because that's not going to be available on the shelves of Radio Shack.
We should mention that product is not available on the shelves of Radio Shack.
No, there is. I have not. You know, I've recently been in a Radio Shack store, and I assured there are no such products on the shelves of Radio Shack stores. And if you lifted export control, and if you deregulated all of that technology, then you really would see such products. So there is a price to be paid.
The Internet is well over 25 years old by this time, yet security has been a long time in coming. We have a few things. We have things like passwords when you try to FTP in to a certain account, but we don't have a real security infrastructure. Has the Internet tried to do security too well and as a result not come up with things that we can use today?
Well, I think the lack of security on the Internet is, first of all, this is not a problem that is unique to the internet. If you look at other networks that are built, they either have no security or, worse yet, they have the half-measure security that I'd say our students break trivially. Security that appears to be security for the end users, but in fact is not proof against any kind of a serious attack. Within the internet, we have very little half-measure security. I'd hardly think we have any at all. We have a lot of no security, and I think a lot of that is based on the history of the ARPANET, the internet coming from the ARPANET, coming from a research community, researchers, good guys, lots of other good guys, not thinking of the network as a commercial vehicle. Certainly the early people who built it were not saying, hey, I'm building a banking network. They said, no, I'm building a network to do my research on. And, you know, nothing that somebody else can do to this network is particularly interesting or damaging to me. In fact, the Internet Worm incident, which I think scared a lot of people in 1988 on the Internet, to some parts of the research community was an interesting curiosity. Gee, I didn't know you can do something like that. That's pretty neat. So it's a different point of view. And, of course, now we're playing catch-up. Now we have a situation where the Internet, in some sense, while we weren't looking, went in a very short period of time from that research toy to being a major commercial network where people, people will say, well, it's not really a commercial network, but I would say that there's a lot of people, if not most people today, who use the Internet, use it as part of the thing that they have to do their job. So it's part of their life, and they view it as a secure production service that is got to be there. And that may not be commercial, though, of course, we're becoming more commercial, but that is certainly not a research network either. And so we're playing catch-up. And people have criticized the people doing security in the Internet on insisting on doing very strong measures. And those strong measures sometimes have problems, like using proprietary technology, like running head-on into export control laws that cause things to slow down and not be immediately available. But I think in the long run, that's the wise course to take, because otherwise we'd have a proliferation of half measures, which would probably last us 2 or 3 years until some bright, obnoxious Robert Morris Jr. lookalike decides to demonstrate how bad they are. I think if we're going to deploy a security technology, it really does have to be good enough that we don't all wind up with egg on our face.
There's a movement out there that says that PIM is too complicated and too secure, and we ought to be using a software product called Pretty Good Messaging. Can you comment on that? Is that just one of those half-baked measures?
No. Pretty Good Privacy, the PGP program, has benefited from the PEM technology. If anything, it is an implementation of the basic concepts and ideas of PEM, with a couple of interesting twists added to fit the political bent of its designers. It's not compliant with PEM. I don't want to say it's a PEM implementation. But it's certainly been influenced by the PEM RFCs. You might say it's a free-form version of PEM with some liberties taken with message formats and encryption algorithms. The controversy that swirls around it has to do with the fact that the people who own the technology in the United States are not party to it and are not getting compensated, and there's some political issues around that I don't really want to get into. And, of course, because it's flowing across borders, mostly from Europe into the U.S., because it was developed, for the most part, the current version, beyond the U.S. borders, I like to joke that we've created a new class of software. We have commercial software, we have freeware, we have shareware. Well, PGP was the first example I've seen of forbiddenware. And as such, it has a certain appeal to a certain sort of mindset that exists on the network. But it's not a half measure, and in fact, if anything, it's demonstrating that the features that the PEM technology and the public key technology can provide are both wanted and very valuable.
You're listening to Geek of the Week. Support for this program is provided by Sun Microsystems. Sun Microsystems, open systems for open minds. Additional support for Geek of the Week comes from O'Reilly & Associates, publishers of books that help people get more out of computers.